Well, good morning. All right. I think you guys at 10:15, you got an extra hour and 15 minutes of sleep from the last service. I think you guys can do a little bit better than that. Good morning. There it is. Hey, like I said earlier, we are continuing this morning with part two of this series that we are calling Four. And I thought as we sort of dive into part two, it was only fitting for you and I to sort of join in on an activity together. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to picture in your mind the answer, the person to this question. Have you ever experienced someone in your life who is for you? Now, when I say that, I am not talking about someone who has been on the same team as you for a season in your workplace. I'm not talking about someone who does something for you because they want something in return. I'm not even talking about someone who feels obligated to do things for you because they share the last name as you. I'm talking about someone in your life who has leveraged everything they are and everything they have simply for your betterment. You see, for those of us in this room who pull into our minds a picture of someone who we can say beyond a shadow of a doubt in their lives has leveraged everything they are and everything they have in order to make us better, no strings attached, nothing in return, what we would proclaim is this, is that that is absolutely incredible, right? Is that that is life-changing for us, not just because it changes the circumstances of our lives or the things that we're walking through, but also because it changes our perspective. It changes our perspective of what we are called to. It changes our perspective of what we are capable of in the world around us. And ultimately, what's so incredible about that is this, is that as you've experienced somebody in your life who has leveraged everything they are and everything they have simply for your betterment, what you slowly begin to realize is this, is that doing that for another person requires an inordinate amount of sacrifice, right? Is that it requires that person to give up something on their behalf or maybe give up a whole lot on their behalf simply to make your life in the course and the direction of your life better. It's an absolute game changer. But unfortunately, for too many of us in this room, when I posed that question, there was no one that came to mind. Or maybe lovingly you squeezed the hand of the person next to you and you thought of them, but this morning when you were getting ready for church and you were honking the horn in the garage and you were screaming, you better get your butt in the car now, that wasn't the case, right? You see, the reality is for so many of us, our minds are blank when we think of having a person that is actually for us, giving up who they are and what they have for our betterment. And because of that, it in turn forces us to withhold who we are and what we have for other people. We have spent a majority of our adult lives, whether we like to admit it or not, withholding ourselves because we have been burned by the world. Because we have been burned by somebody else in the world. We've walked through divorce. We've walked through broken relationships. We've walked through being stabbed in the back. And because of that, it forces us to be hesitant with what we give away, with what we sacrifice on our own for someone else. But here's the incredible part. Our mission, our purpose, our calling in this world to be for it, not against it, was never meant to be predicated on whether or not the world is for us. Our mission, our purpose, our calling in this world was always meant to be predicated on the truth that God is for us. That's why this series is so powerful, because that's the foundation that we laid out last week. That while we look around and what we see is a world who oftentimes is adamantly against us, what we can return back to again and again and again is this, is we have a God who is beside us. We have a God who goes before us. Sometimes we have a God who is behind us, pushing us up the hills of life. And because of that, what it does is this, it allows us to connect the dots. And when we connect the dots, if you humor me for a second, it changes what we do with our lives. You see, when we recognize that my God is for me, what that ultimately means is the God of the universe is also for the person sitting next to you. It's also for the person sitting across the room for you. He's also for the person that lives across the city from you that you've never met before. He's for the person that lives in a country that you will never visit and never meet. What that means is this, is that if we acknowledge that God is for me and in turn God is for everybody else in this world, I no longer have the right to say, if the perfect God of the universe isn't for you, then I'm not for you. You see, if a perfect God can be for you, then that calls me in my imperfections to be for you as well. But that must move from our head to our heart, that we recognize and we believe that God is for us, because until we believe that, we will stay stuck and relying on the world to determine whether or not we will in turn be for the world. And so we come back to passages like this one that speak truth into our lives and into our circumstances. When Paul writes this in Romans chapter 8, verse 31, maybe some of you have heard this before in some way, shape, or form, even if you've never been in a church before. Paul writes this: if God is for us, who can ever be against us? If I begin to buy into the reality that God is beside me, that God is in my corner, that God is for me, then what I can in turn recognize is no one can be against me. It drives me to be for the world, even if the entire world is against me. And some of you sit there and you say, Ben, I have heard that passage before. I know it. I believe it. It's been recited 100 times. But my question is this: do you really know it? Do you really believe it? And you're saying, well, Ben, how would I know if I really believe it? How would I know if that truth has moved from my head to my heart? You see, when we know that and we believe that God is for us, there's only one fitting response. It forces you and it forces me to be for the world. See, if we step back and we take an honest look at our lives and we buckle in today, because it's going to be practical, but it's going to sting a little bit when we take an honest look at our lives. When we look at our lives and we recognize that there are some places that I'm holding back, that I'm not really for my neighbor, I'm not really for my city, I don't feel like my world really deserves any of my time, care, attention, effort. What it means is we haven't fully internalized that God is for me, and that's the driving point for my life. Anything else, that is the starting and the ending place for my life. But so often, if you're anything like me, and I hope none of y'all are like me, if you're anything like me, I have a tendency in my human nature to play the pick and choose game. Like, I look at my relationships, I look at the people, unfortunately, who walk into this church, and oftentimes there's this tendency, because of my broken human nature, to play pick and choose. Of like, okay, I think that person deserves my care and attention and time and love right now, but that person, they're not making wise choices. That person, they're getting what they deserve. That person has burned me a time or two, and because they have burned me, now I don't think I really want to invest in them. I don't want to put myself out on the line. I don't want to risk being hurt. And what's so incredible, you've heard me say this before, this is not a new tendency. This is not something in our lives that has just risen to the surface in the 21st century. It's not like all of a sudden this pick and choose game has become worse in the world that we live in. What simply happened is this: social media has magnified it. And I don't know if that makes me feel better or worse, but this is a problem that has been around in our world since Adam and Eve sinned thousands of years ago. It introduced this tendency in all of us into this world, that we have a tendency to justify and pick. Okay, I think this person I will help. I think this person deserves my time. I think if I give my time, this person won't hurt me, but I'm not so sure over here. And so maybe I hedge my bet a little over here. Maybe I hold just a little bit back over here. Maybe I don't give anything at all over here because I know what the likely outcome is going to be. And so maybe it's not even worth standing up and saying that I am for you, that I am in your corner, that I want to be beside you. But what's so incredible is this. Because this is not a new problem in our human tendencies, because this has been taking place for thousands of years, what's so incredible is that this guy named Jesus, when he walked onto this earth, he talked about the very thing that we struggle with in being for other people. He gave us insight into what it looked like. He helped us with guidelines on how to get over that hurdle in our lives when there are things holding us back. And what's so incredible is that Jesus walked in to the story of history at a very moment when in Jewish culture, they were struggling. They were at the height of a struggle with the pick and choose game. You see, what we see when Jesus enters the scene, the timeline of history in Jewish culture is this. There were Pharisees, Sadducees, religious leaders who had developed laws. And those laws were predicated on this thought. It is a determination of who is clean and who is unclean. They had hundreds of laws that were meant to determine whether or not you were clean, whether or not you were in right standing with God, or whether or not you were unclean and in wrong standing with God. And here's what's so disheartening. Those laws that they had written determined who they came in contact with. If you were unclean, it was a justification for me to have no contact with you, to not help you, to not pick you up, to not even touch you, right? If you didn't go through the ceremonial hand washing, if you had leprosy, if you had any of those things, you were deemed unclean. You were unclean in the sight of God, and that means that I am not going to have anything to do with you. And Jesus storms onto the timeline of history, and he says, whoa, 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 hang on just a second. Where'd you come up with that? Where'd you start to develop that in the way in which you live, the way in which you operate for this world? What I'm calling you to and my mission and my purpose for your life, for this organization called the local church, where did you ever come up with this idea that you got to play a pick and choose game? And as he sees this happening in the world around him, fittingly enough, he encounters one of those such men who has written those rules to determine who is in and who is out. And we pick up that story this morning in the book of Luke chapter 10. It's where we're going to spend the entirety of our time moving through this passage. But what we see is an expert in the religious law, call him a religious lawyer, call him a religious leader, whatever you feel most comfortable with, but this expert in the religious law who knows the law front and back comes to Jesus, and he comes to Jesus with this one purpose, and we see it in the very first verse there, one that happens time and time again in the Pharisees, Sadducees, religious leaders' encounters with Jesus. They are simply trying to trick him. They're trying to back him into a corner to make him say something that would prove, number one, you are not the Messiah, the Son of God. Number two, you aren't even a very good rabbi, dude. Like, you shouldn't even be a religious leader. You shouldn't even be in the same category as us. And so in that vein, this man starts the dialogue in this way, starting in verse 25. One day, an expert in religious law stood up to test Jesus by asking him this question. Teacher, what should I do to inherit eternal life? Here, he asked Jesus a question, and if you're anything like me, right, I always want to look like the smart guy. And so when anyone asks me a question as humanity, what's our natural tendency? How do we react to that? We want to give an answer, right? Like, even if we're not sure what the answer is, we'll kind of make up a little bit and we'll say it so that they think we're smart, so that they know that maybe we have the answers. But here, Jesus chooses to take a different approach. Jesus replied, "What does the law of Moses say? How do you read it?" Or some translations say, "How do you interpret it?" And here, this is what's so incredible. This is a side note, but I think this can give us a little bit of a leg up in our relationships with other people. In this moment, here's what Jesus recognized. That when someone asks you a question and you immediately give an answer to look smart, that turns into a lecture. I didn't come for lectures. I came for relationship. And what opens up the dialogue of conversation is this. I'm going to ask you a question back. Because I want to listen, because I want to hear your answer, because I want to hear your perspective, because I want to hear where you are coming from. And so Jesus replies, well, how do you see it? How do you read it? How do you interpret it? And the man answered, you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength, and all your mind. Now, in historical context, here's what's taking place. This crowd is beginning to gather as this man asks Jesus the question. Jesus poses a question back to the man, and he answers the question in this way. You must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, all your strength. What this man is doing is he is reciting the Jewish Shema. Can you say that with me without spitting or breathing on the person in front of you? Shema. Yes. The Jewish Shema was the foundation of the Jewish faith. And what it recognized was this. Every good Jew believed this. They believed that being in right standing with God was simply a vertical matter. Does that make sense? That it was simply about me loving God with all my heart, all my soul, all my mind, and all my strength. And if I did that, then that determined whether or not I was in right standing with God. But this expert in the religious law, what we find is this. As he sort of sifted through all of the laws, all that we find in Leviticus, what he found was that that wasn't the whole story. That being in right standing with God was more than just a vertical thing. That there was a second part of this, that in order for us to be right with God, we must get right in our lives. And so he tacks on to that. And for some of us who have grown up in the church, we've heard Jesus say this as well, right? What's the most important commandment? Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second is equally important. You must love your neighbor as yourself. You see, in this moment, this man is pointing out this truth. Being in right standing with God isn't just vertical. There's a horizontal element to it as well. You can't be right with God and wrong with others. You can't be right with God and wrong with your spouse. You can't be right with God and wrong with your kids. But there's this reality that to be right with God, it requires us both vertically and horizontally to get things right in our lives, to prove that we are for God, for other people. And so as he lays that out, Jesus responds in this way, right. Jesus told him, do this and you will live. And the story should have ended there, right? But the man, as he looks at his life and looks at the way in which he acts to the people around him, the students that he shares hallways with, the coworkers that are in the cubicles beside him, as he looks at his life, what he sees is this. I don't think I've always loved my neighbor as myself. And so he has to ask a follow-up question. And the follow-up question opens up a can of worms in your life and in my life. The man wanted to justify his actions. So he asked Jesus, and who is my neighbor? Jesus, could you define this for me just a little bit? You know what this man was really asking? Jesus, how far do I have to go? Ever found yourself there? I have. Like, Jesus, can you kind of define the least that I have to do? And then I'll make sure that I just live up to that and we'll be good. Because Jesus, what I'd kind of like to do is this. I want to do what you want me to do, da 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 da. But I also want to have enough margin to do what I want to do. And yet Jesus doesn't take the bait. Jesus doesn't give the answer to what is the minimum. Jesus sets the bar much higher. And in this very moment, I think this is so incredible. I believe with all of my heart in this very moment, this is what makes following Jesus so absolutely compelling. This is why we believe with all of our heart that it's worth following this man named Jesus. Because Jesus never pulled punches. He never stopped short. He wanted the very best for your life and out of your life. He came to give you life and give it to the full. And he said, in order for you to do that, it's not about doing the very least. I'm calling you to do everything you can possibly do with your life. Eternal life starts now. We talked about that last week. That in order for you to live the best life possible, it's not something that happens after death. It's something that starts right now. And this is so incredible. You see, here at Core, we believe this. That when we take Jesus' advice, not only does Jesus make your life better, but we believe with all of our heart that Jesus makes you better at life. And in this moment, this big question is put out on the table. Who is my neighbor? How far do I have to go? How far do I have to reach? And Jesus begins off in the only fitting way, as he does time and time again. I'm not going to give you a straight answer to this. I want to tell you a story. Because I want to drive this home with something that's practical and tangible in your life that you can understand, that you can put into practice as you live in this world. And he begins the story by making it clear that when you define your neighbor, the first and maybe the hardest step is to recognize that your neighbor and my neighbor are the undeserving. Our neighbors are the undeserving. And he says this as we continue the story. He starts to tell the story in verse 30. Jesus replied with a story. A Jewish man was traveling from Jerusalem down to Jericho.
And he was attacked by bandits. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him up, and left him half dead beside the road. Now, here's what we miss in the text. It doesn't outline this, but when we look at historical context, it gives us a better picture. Check this out. What we know is that this journey from Jerusalem to Jericho was on a road, fittingly enough, that was called the Jericho Road. And what we know about the Jericho Road in historical context is this, is that the Jericho Road was seldomly policed by the Roman government. They did not send Roman soldiers out there. They very rarely made sure that everyone was being civil on their journeys on the Jericho Road. Why? We don't get an answer for that, but we know that to be true. And so if you were to travel on the Jericho Road going either direction from Jericho to Jerusalem, Jerusalem to Jericho, what you did was this. You put a plan in place to ensure your safety on the journey. Typically what people would do is they would travel in groups or they would travel on horseback. They would ensure that there was a plan in place to make sure that this very thing that happened to this man didn't happen to them. Because if you just walked along the Jericho Road by yourself, chances were pretty good that the bandits and the robbers that were waiting there because they knew there was no police there, they were going to attack you. But here's what's going on behind the scenes. Jesus is setting the table in this moment. Because as soon as he told the story or started the story with this, the man was traveling on the Jericho Road and he was walking alone. You know where every Jew's mind went? The dude got what he deserved. Because he made a dumb choice. He didn't put the precautions in place that were necessary to ensure that the bandits and the robbers didn't get. He was asking for it. And it's like Jesus started the story in this place. Man, what you need to understand is this, is that justification for who you are for and who you're against never starts in your definition of who deserves it and who doesn't. You think there are people in your life who don't deserve it? That's your neighbor too. I'm calling you to love them too. If you've been around CORE for any amount of time, one of the things you know is that we want our building, the limited building that we have here, to be seen as a community center. One of the ways as a leadership team and staff that we believe that we could do that is this, is that as families go through milestone moments, as they have graduations, birthday parties, Christmas parties, weddings, whatever that looks like, that we wanted to open up our building to them, whether they called CORE Community Church home or not. And so we took that step, and we wanted to open up our building to them absolutely free of charge. And so we have dozens of gatherings that happen here in this building on a typical year. And in those requests that typically come in, one of the things that has happened a half a dozen times in all of those requests and in our efforts to reach out and to be for our city and to be for the people of our city is this. Every once in a while, we will have people that will request our building who have decided years ago, months ago, to leave CORE. And I expose my brokenness every single week. I hope you guys are good with that. One of the things that we've stood strong on is this. Man, we want to be a church that's mature enough to look people in the eye and say, our number one goal for you is that we want you to grow in your relationship with Jesus Christ every single day. And if you can't do it at CORE Community Church and you feel like you can do it someplace else, we're good with that. That's how we want to be for you. But in those moments, my brokenness and my sin and some of my justification wants to rise back to the surface. And it wants to make this statement inside of me. You made your bed, you lie in it. And oftentimes when the staff asks or someone asks, like, why? Why let them do it? Like, everything inside of me wants to say, I have no idea why. But deep down, I know why. This is why. Because being for our city, being for people, isn't about drawing lines in the sand. It isn't about determining in your own mind, with your own experience, who deserves it and who doesn't deserve it. It means loving people based upon what God is calling us to. And sometimes that means saying yes, even when it doesn't make sense. And should there be healthy boundaries? Absolutely. But sometimes that's our justification. Well, this is just healthy boundaries. And so we say, no, 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 no. You made your bed, lie in it. And God is saying, where in the picture does your undeserving neighbor come into it in your life? Where you are going to be for them, where you are going to love them in spite of whether or not they love you back. God's calling us to treat the undeserving as our neighbor, but he doesn't stop there. He says, I also want you to see the overlooked as your neighbor. In verse 31, by chance, a priest came along. But when he saw the man lying there, he crossed to the other side of the road and passed him by. A temple assistant walked over and looked at him lying there. But he also passed by on the other side. Now, this is so incredible, right? This is kind of where I geek out. In the historical context, what we see is Jesus, again, sets the table. And he goes for the highest of the high in Jewish culture. And the crowd begin to hear him tell the story. And they're like, oh, the Jewish priest. And he's good. He's the best of the best. He's definitely going to stop and love that guy, right? Nope, doesn't do it. Overlooks him. All right, we'll go down second in command, one step down the totem pole. Temple assistant, the one right under the priest. He still works for God. He's in the temple every single day. He's going to choose to do what is right. Somehow the temple priest, he went to like an online school, and he's not really a priest or something like that. No laughs. All right. And so he comes to the second guy. He doesn't do it either. And Jesus is looking at you and at me thousands of years later, and he's saying, every single day we pass by people who every other person has overlooked them, who said, they're not worthy, they're not worth my time. Are you going to choose to stop? Are you going to choose to look at the people that no one else is willing to look at, to see the hurt that no one else is willing to see? And oftentimes in my own life, this is what it looks like for me. And I'm not here to debate whether or not we should be doing this. This is just an example. That oftentimes, if you ever found yourself in this situation, you pull up to the street corner and there's a homeless guy there on the street corner, and you're like, don't make eye contact. Like, just make sure you look the other way until the light turns green. Oftentimes in our lives, that's an example of what we do with the people around us. Like, just don't look. Act like you don't see it, and then you won't have to be held accountable to whether or not you love them, to whether or not you did something for them. Jesus is saying, are you willing to see the people that no one else sees? And then it's almost like he drives the nail in the coffin. He says, I want you to be for the undeserving. I want you to be for the overlooked. But I also want you to be for your enemy. I want you to be for the person that you despise. And he sets up that tension in this way. Then a despised Samaritan came along. And in that moment, you can just sense, right? You can picture with me this collective groan that goes up amongst the crowd. Why? Because the Samaritans and the Jews were mortal enemies. They hated each other. And here, Jesus is throwing a Samaritan in the story. Jesus, I don't care if you're writing him in as the good guy, the bad guy, something in between. We don't even want a Samaritan in the story. But here, you're putting him into the story. A despised Samaritan came along, and when he saw the man, oh, no. No, 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 Jesus. You're not going there, right? He felt compassion for him. It's like in this moment, it was the Republican looking at the Democrat. The Democrat looking at the Republican. The mask proponent looking at the non-mask proponent. The person on this side of the line looking at the person on that side of the line. And Jesus is saying, I don't know where you put these lines into the game, but I'm calling you to erase them now. That your neighbor is the person that you've looked at as the other side of the line. And either erase the line or just step over there. But that's who I'm calling you to neighbor. That's who I'm calling you to love. And we see Jesus say things like this over and over and over again. Man, what good is it if you love people who love you? Anyone can do that. But what separates you from the bunch is this. Can you love the person that hates you? Man, that's what proves whether or not you are for. That's what proves whether or not you want to be a world changer or not. Are you willing to neighbor your enemy? But he keeps going. And he says, it's about the undeserving, it's about the overlooked, it's about the enemy. But I also want you to know, just in case you were wondering, that I am calling you to love the unattractive people and places in this world. The unattractive is your neighbor. In verse 34, going over to him, the Samaritan soothed his wounds with olive oil and wine and bandaged them. Then he put the man on his own donkey and he took him to an inn where he took care of him. Just imagine that. This man is beat up. He's bleeding. He's been left for dead on the side of the road, which means undoubtedly by the time in which everyone else has passed him by and the Samaritan comes to him, this man stinks. And so reaching down into this man's life, touching him, putting him on your shoulder, riding the same donkey as him, do you know what that did? That meant you stunk as well. And it wasn't just a hit to the way in which you smelled for a day. When the rest of the Jews saw you, or the rest of the Samaritans saw you convening with person on the other side, you know what else took a hit? Your reputation. And I think oftentimes in our lives, in our communities, it's like, man, I don't even want to be seen in the unattractive parts of our community. I don't want to be known for being associated with some of those people. Y'all okay? And God is saying, man, those are the very places that I want you most. Those are the very places that you can prove to the world that not only are you for them, but I am for them. I'm calling you to venture into uncomfortable land, uncomfortable ground, to get yourself dirty. And when you do that, this is the statement you make. God's reputation is more important than my own. Y'all okay? I don't know about you, but my heart needs that to sit for a second. How many times am I willing to live a life that says God's reputation is more important than my own? Can we be for the unattractive people and places in our world, even when it costs us something? And then Jesus ties this perfect bow on the end. He says, in these first four that I've given you, if you haven't recognized it already, there should be a pretty clear picture that in all of these, your neighbor most of the time is the person or the people who will cause some inconvenience. That it will not be easy. That there will be sacrifices that need to be made. Remember what we talked about at the very beginning? We recognize that someone being for us is powerful. Why? Because it required a sacrifice from them. They had to give up what they were, what they had, for the betterment of us. And God is saying, I will call you into inconvenient places because that's where the greatest world change happens. Being for people will not always be convenient. And I think so often for me, convenience is a luxury that I find hard to want to give up. But that's where the most life change happens. Maybe not always in that person. Maybe it's in my own heart. Where stepping into inconvenient places molds and shapes my heart into the way in which God wanted it to be. But then he throws it back to this man and he says, hey, I just want to check in and make sure you were listening. Now, which of these three would you say was a neighbor to the man who was attacked by the bandits? Jesus asked. And it's like in this moment, man, what is Jesus really asking? Jesus is asking this religious leader this one very important question. Which of these three men loved the Lord their God with all of their heart, soul, mind, and strength by loving the stranger as himself? But the question doesn't stop there. Which of these three men proved that they love God with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength by loving the undeserving as himself, by loving the overlooked as himself, by loving their enemy as himself, by loving the unattractive as himself, by loving the inconvenient as himself? And you can just imagine this man with a giant gulp as he's swallowing his pride and he can't even bring himself to say the name of the Samaritan. He simply responds in this way: the one who showed him mercy. Then Jesus said, yes, now go and do the same. It's like in this moment, Jesus was saying, I'm setting the table for what it looks like to be for your world. There are no boundaries. There are no just enoughs. There are no minimum requirements. I'm calling you to step into inconvenient places, into uncomfortable territory, to change the world for me. But Ben, what tangibly does that look like? What are the steps that are required for us? What will this take to love our neighbor well, to love the people in our lives who are enemies, who are unattractive, who are inconvenient, who are overlooked, who are undeserving? You see, the first step that we must take is this. We have to be willing every single day to open our eyes. It's a conscious choice. Will you see the hurt? The Jewish priest overlooked it. The temple assistant overlooked it. The Samaritan was the one who was willing to open his eyes and see the hurt that was taking place in his world. Will it be uncomfortable? Absolutely. But that is the only way in which we can be for. And then we will be required to open our hearts, to break loose of the lines that have been drawn, to allow our hearts to break wide open, to say there's no such thing as enemies or allies, that I am going to be for this world, the hurting, the broken in this world. And when I open my eyes and I open my heart, and I see the hurt, and I don't see the enemy lines that have been drawn in the sand, what it requires of me next is to open my hands, to be willing to get dirty, to be willing to sacrifice my reputation, to be willing to do something. Samaritan picked him up. He got dirty. He did the hard work. And then the Samaritan chose open his wallet. It will require us to open our wallet, that there will be moments in our lives where we will have to put our money where our mouth is. And Samaritan paid for the man. And he didn't just pay for the man out of what he had. He said, here's what I have, take it and care for the man. And the next time that I return, if the bill is more than that, then I will give you what you are due. He opened up his wallet to be for a hurting world, to be for a hurting person, and then he opened up his schedule. See, it'll take time to build a bridge that's strong enough to bear the weight of truth. For the Samaritan, it wasn't just today. He stayed overnight and cared for him until tomorrow. And then what did he say? I'm coming back again, and I'm going to check on this guy, and I'm going to make sure that my bill is paid up, and I'm going to make sure that he was cared for well. It takes time to build a bridge that's strong enough to bear the weight of truth, to change this world, to change our city, to be for our neighbors. And I know we're all busy, I get it, but are we too busy to make the right choices for the right reasons for the biggest impact? Man, being compassionate for our neighbors, it isn't a feeling. There's no such thing. Being compassionate is about doing. God is calling us to do for our neighbors. That is what it looks like to love. That is what it looks like to be for. That is what it looks like to follow Christ's example and to change this world. One moment, one life at a time. Will you pray with me? Father, we thank you for this day. God, again and again and again, we come back and we thank you for being a God who is for us. Man, when I take a hard look at my own life, what I recognize is I don't deserve that. I've made mistakes. My human nature rises up time and time again. And I'm blown away that a perfect God would look at me and be willing to erase all of that. And time again, to stand in my corner. God, we thank you for that. But God, may we follow your example. This morning, we finish by simply asking for courage. Because being for the unattractive, being for the undeserving, being for the inconvenient, being for the overlooked, being for the enemy, it will be no easy task. But what we believe with all of our hearts is that when we follow your lead, our lives and our impact become better because of it. And God, that's what we want. So may we follow through on that. It's in your name I pray. Amen. So where the rubber meets the road is this. What does that look like in your life? What does it look like to answer those difficult questions this week? Am I willing to step into my neighborhood, into my world, and love the undeserving, and love the overlooked, and erase the enemy lines, and to look for the unattractive places, and to go to inconvenient moments? See, when we're willing to do that, we change the world individually. When we do that organizationally, as the local church, the impact is monumental. And I want to challenge you with this. Maybe the first step for you is something that's been put on a platter for you. Simply today, signing up for Stand for Shelby. Linking arms with us, and that being your first small step in the right direction to being for our neighbors, to being for our city. And knowing that you have the support system of 150, 175, 200 people that are linking arms with you on that same day to take that same step in the direction that God is calling us to. So thanks so much for being here this morning. Hope you have a great rest of your Sunday. We hope to see you back next week as we continue with part 3 of our series 4.